It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running on this 14th day of March. Beware the ice of March. No, the ice is tomorrow. The ice is today. Never mind. Snowed. Ugh. Now, beware the ice of March, this 14th day of March, 2023. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tube. And that's where you go if you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky's any real-time madcap multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the Great Globe Round, and where... If, as this program begins, as it is right now, you were to jump into the chat room, you would be greeted by early arrivers Squeaky and Theo. Hey, Squeaky. Hey, Theo. And capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third stage guild navigator, has declined to fold space and has remained Sparky, and he is assisted by Horn Chief Agronomist and Chief Mathematician and Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Roger, in Oregon. Hi, I'm Robin. And, y'all, I appreciate, I'm seeing some comments on the podcast, and I really appreciate it. And so, and so too do the poor lonely algorithms. And God, Brother Deacon Asa just loves it. So like and subscribe, leave a comment if you're listening to the podcast. That is, and above all, tell your friends and neighbors. And if you're listening on TuneIn, hit that little heart button. It makes a difference. We're trying to get up to 1,000 people listening on TuneIn alone. And it would be, you know, if you're new to the program, it helps out a lot. Doesn't cost anything either, which is really cool because everything does. Yes, Sparky, you're absolutely right. It is 314. It is Pi Day. I wish I could celebrate with pie. I like pie. I love pie. Who am I kidding? But I hope everybody else who can is celebrating with pie. Yes. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different, and so consequently, we say thank you to our 14th day of the month subscribers, and that means thank you so very kindly to Ralphs, and thank you to Matt in San Francisco. Thank you. Thanks as well to Cecilia jumping in yesterday. And thanks to Lori. Hey, Lori, thank you so much for jumping in. That means the fundraising goal as it presently stands is at, wait a second, 1060. 1060. Thank you so much. It would be, looking at, some things going away or being turned off, things like that, because it's a constant struggle just to keep all of this going. But, yeah, it would be great if we could knock things down from that 1060. Thank you to Cecilia, and thank you to Lori for helping us do that. The fundraising goal would have otherwise been 1155, if not for you. So 1060, a scant 6 years before William the Bastard of Normandy set sail across the English Channel and had a little dust-up at a place called Runnymede. And honest to God, that has always sounded just gross. Runnymede. I mean, who wants thick or chunky mead? I've had mead. I can't imagine it being anything but runny. It's a fermented liquid. Never mind. But we're at 1060, okay? 1060. And, of course, it is Titanic Tuesday on the horn, which means that, in point of fact, we will be taking note of Titanic manifestations of right-wing intellect. Like, for instance, down in Florida, because I guess for the time being, there's always going to be a Florida story, thanks to, Ron Monkey up DeClantis. And by the way, I was noticing yesterday, after the program, I think he's changed his foundation color. And I'm not being snarky. Politicians and mucky mucks will use foundation just to sort of even out skin tones and whatnot. And, of course, Ron Monkey Up DeClantis lives in Skin Cancer Central. So maybe he's using something with a little SPF in it. Estee Lauder makes a Hydra Rescue, and it's got SPF 45 in it. Unfortunately, it doesn't come in a shade that's pale enough for me. I usually go for something around, ghost. But I noticed that he's been choosing foundation shades that are a little closer to pumpkin orange. God knows why. I mean, maybe one never knows how one goes about dog whistling the maggot base. Hey, y'all, look at me. I look like a demented circus peanut, too. Hi, Scott. But it really doesn't suit him. It just doesn't. I think the shade, the last I checked, it's called Springtime Jaundice. And given the fact that his wife, we had the story, last week, that his wife was the one who first got him to wear those adorable little cowgirl boots that he wears now with the, tall heels that raise him up from slightly less munchkin-like status so that he can stand tall next to Nitwit Nero. I'm guessing maybe she picked out the new foundation shade, too. But anyway, that's not the purpose of this story. No. The Florida legislature is in session, which means that fascist wackiness rules the day. Why, yes, in this case it does. Lee in New York asking, DeSantis SPF, does SPF stand for scary political fascist? Lee, you are quick on the uptake, and it so entirely does. Scary political fascist. 45. Oh, wait, 45. The Estee Lauder Hydra Rescue, SPF 45, scary political fascist 45, and Nitwit Nero was president. Oh, it's weird when we get little messages from the universe like that. It is. No, but this is actually a story about a senator from the Tampa area, a maggot, a pig licking, named Jay Collins, who has introduced a bill that specifically allows the devil's diaper, the Confederate battle flag as it's known, to be flown outside of government buildings. the exemption was because of another bill that was filed to keep other flags from being flown outside government buildings, like, well, the pride flag, you know, Roy G. Biv, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. Yeah. And he filed an amendment to the bill that would keep the pride flag from being, make sure that the heritage not hate Confederate flag. I wonder if they'll allow the last Confederate flag to be flown outside Florida government buildings too. You know, the one that was solid white and may later have been served as a convenient bolt of cloth for hood making. Yeah, they just want to make sure. Jay Collins said, it just clearly lines up what flags can be flowed over government facilities like the state flag, the Merkin flag, the POW flag, and our firefighters flag. And if it should happen that any of the POWs or firefighters or Americans or Floridians would be a member of the LGBTQ community, well, you know, that's just who they're. That's just who they're at war with. Yeah. It'd be, actually, I think probably the American flag shouldn't fly outside government buildings in Florida because, well, they'd probably be better off flying the Hakenkreuz, if you know what I mean. Not really that much of a surprise, though, in the long run because, well, Florida still celebrates Confederate Memorial Day and Robert E. Lee's birthday and Jefferson Davis's birthday as official state holidays. You know, they close down the building and they close down the offices and things like that, and people get a paid day off to celebrate people who dedicated their lives to making other people's lives miserable by enslaving them. Jesus, these people. Sometimes it just feels like it's a little too much. But that's not really, really, honestly, and for true where I wanted to start. No, I had something different in mind. And it being Titanic Tuesday and all, I thought this was a pretty good example of Titanic intellect, you know, the kind that says full steam ahead into that there iceberg. In point of fact, I thought we might introduce ourselves to one Judge Kyle Duncan. Mm-hmm. This guy has been on the 5th United States Circuit Court of Appeals, and he is a Titanic intellect. He's been on the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals since he was confirmed. He was a MAGA appointee. Me just saying he was a MAGA appointee probably tells us exactly where we're headed with this. He was confirmed in 2018 after a career that, well, let's just say a career that it involved membership in what else? the Federalist Society. Oh, yeah, he's a Federale, all right. Kyle Duncan was invited to speak at the Stanford School of Law. Now, the Fifth Circuit has nothing to do with California. It's nowhere near it, but Stanford is the second most highly ranked law school in the new 90 states of America, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, forever, in the universe under God, amen. And so they do things like inviting hoity-toity, highfalutin judges to speak. And in this case, it was the Stanford School of Law Federalist Society that extended the invitation to this member of the Federalist Society judge. So far, anodyne. But they certainly were, you know, the Federalist Society at Stanford was certainly not going to invite Ketanji Brown Jackson. You know, she's the wrong color, y'all. For the Federalist Society, that is. But the problem is, Stuart Duncan he's got a history. He's one of those assholes. He graduated with high marks from Louisiana State University there in Baton Rouge. And then he went and galumphed around for a little bit until he landed ever so softly. He worked for the Texas Solicitor General's office. The guy's a real nightmare. But he eventually landed at an outfit, and you'll recognize the name, the Beckett Fund. The Beckett Fund is one of those right-wing chop shops tax-exempt, of course. That uses the public good, the public commons, and banks away gajillions of dollars in right-wing billionaire donations and the like to attack the rest of America for not having the same bizarre, sick, twisted, gross, vomit-inducing, nauseating religious beliefs that they do. Let me do this real quick. I have, courtesy of Matt in San Francisco, the 50-mile-an-hour challenge. Hi, Robin. Hi, Matt. Power is out at the house. The rain stopped, and now we're just listening to the wind attempting to blow the house down. Climate change is real, folks, and it's here. Our current season is rain, wind, soon to give way to fire, wind. So there's a $25 challenge on the table. If it's met, Matt will throw in another $25, making $50 to match the wind speed at Shea Matt. So hopefully there's $25 banging around out there somewhere. And one of you will kick in, and that will then turn into $75. Thank you, Matt. Thank you so very fondly. And I will ever remember that a Silicon Valley banker was the first one to throw a brick at Stonewall. I've been giggling about that for about 21 hours now. And let me check here. Yeah, Yeah, sending and recording. We're broadcasting everything. I have confirmation from Brother Deacon Asa via a picture of young Herb Cain. Herb. So we are, in fact, streaming. I say that because Randy Radar said just a couple of minutes ago, remember to hit the record button and throw the third switch. So thanks for the challenge, Matt. And Brother Deacon Asa says, yep, you're hot on the stream. Well, thank you. Now, back to Stuart Duncan. One look at this guy, and you know that the reason he is the right-wing religious bigot that he is probably because he was swirled within an inch of his life every day of his adolescence, and now he's going to take it out on the rest of America. But the thing is, he went to the Stanford Law School to deliver a lecture about his rulings on COVID, because you have to understand, this guy is an absolute COVIDiot. He was eager in the name of the Constitution to have lots and lots of more people die of, COVID-19. He voted to strike down COVID-19 restrictions during the worst of the pandemic. It was horrible. He's horrible. But in the course of his work for the Beckett Fund, and back to the Beckett Fund for just a second here. The Beckett Fund is named after Thomas A. Becket, who was eventually named a saint by the Roman Catholic Church, because at one point in time, Thomas A. Becket was the Chancellor of the Exchequer under King Henry II of England. Henry had put him into the Archbishopric of Canterbury because Henry thought it would be nice to have a buddy there, and maybe he, Henry, the King of freaking England and a huge chunk of France, could maybe get a little work done. Remember, Henry actually introduced the beginnings of the English administrative state. Maybe he, Henry, could get a little king work done if he didn't have the Archbishop of Canterbury constantly up his posterior, probably a poor choice of words, and making life difficult by trying to rule England instead of he, the king, ruling England. Well, Thomas Becket managed to make himself such a nuisance that in a fit of pique at one point in time, at least according to historical legend, Henry II, speaking to his barons, said, "Will no one rid me of this meddlesome priest?" You know, there's nothing worse than a new convert. Because Thomas Becket had never been much in the way of a religious guy. He certainly wasn't a priest when he was Chancellor of the Exchequer of England. He had been made like a deacon in the church just on a pro forma basis, but he ran around and caroused. I mean, he and Henry were pals, and they ran around and caroused and whored around like the buddies that they were, and that's what Henry expected him to be in the archbishopric of Canterbury. Instead, like I said, he became a noxious asshole and wanted to impose his vision of religious piety on the anointed king of England, and by extension, everybody else. Until, like I said, he became so noxious that Henry said, well, no one rid me of this meddlesome priest, and his barons took him at his word and went into the cathedral at Canterbury and chopped Thomas a Becket into chutney, which, by the way, the English had not heard of at that point in the 10th century Common Era that I know of. And so they rapidly turned him into a saint for being a general obnoxious piece of shit. And so the modern Becket Fund is named after an obnoxious religious maniac piece of shit, Thomas Becket. And true to their name, they have continued to be an obnoxious POS for anybody who does not believe according to their weird-ass religious dictates. Stuart Duncan, from 2012 to 2014, was general counsel of the Becket Fund for Religious Liberty, and as such ran the Becket Fund's nationwide litigation. He probably got the gig in 2012 because he was first, I don't know if you have to ride a goat or what, but he was initiated into the Federalist Society. And he did some time as a law professor at Ole Miss. And then some benighted assholes at Columbia University, not affiliated with CBS, hired him on as an assistant professor of associate in law at Columbia. Then, like I said, he went off to the Texas AG's office, where he was assistant solicitor general in the office of solicitor general there. Remember, if you're thinking about whether this constitutes resume padding, well, on the right wing it does, because another former solicitor general of the most puissant Christian authoritarian dictatorship of Texistan was, of course, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. He actually argued two cases before the Supreme Court of the United States. He was lead counsel in Burwell versus Hobby Lobby. You remember Hobby Lobby, don't you? Yeah, me too. Then he had some time. That's where the notion of sincerely held religious beliefs were applied to a freaking closely held corporation, which by definition cannot have religious beliefs because it's not a... Oh, I'm sorry. Corporations are too, people, my friends, human beings. Thank you, Bishop Willard Romney, for that. Yeah. And then he was part of Cher Duncan LLP, a law firm in D.C. And then in 2018, Nitwit Nero. Made him... a nominee for the 5th United States Circuit Court of Appeals, where he has continued to wreak havoc. One gets the idea that he would very much like to be a member of the Supreme Court of the United States. I know, it's gross. And so it's because he was a member of the, or is a member of the 5th United States Circuit Court of Appeals, that the Federalist Society at Stanford decided to invite him to speak. Well, by the time he got to Stanford there in Palo Alto, California, it had already become well known in the community just exactly what kind of an asshole, I don't know, I said Stuart Duncan, Kyle Duncan is. And that is to say, if you are not white, not male, not heterosexual, and not, most of all, his kind of Christian, well, you're shit out of luck in Kyle Duncan's world. This guy's a monster. Make no mistake. Oh, by the way, the password is dog shit. Sorry. So what happened is, he was invited to speak. Students at Stanford Law, who are paying a small fortune to go to that august institution, showed up in the hall for the lecture, and they brought protest signs with them. Because this guy is toxic. A woman who was a prisoner in the federal system made a simple request of the Bureau of Prisons, asking that she simply be referred to by her name and with she, her pronouns. The case was United States versus Varner. Describing the case, Ian Millhiser at Vox said, "The main thing at stake in Varner is whether three judges will treat a woman with courtesy or with needless cruelty. Two of them chose the latter option. Catherine Nicole Jett, a trans woman, incarcerated in a federal prison, said that since she had transitioned, that she preferred to be referred to on court documents as Catherine Nicole Jett. Well, because he is a religious maniac, and because he not only despises trans people, he despises the LGBTQ community as well, he once supported on behalf of the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty an attempt to deny visitation by children of their parent who was a lesbian. Sounds a little like Tom Fast in that regard. You know, my member of the House of Delegates, he once spent engaged in a jihad against a pair of lesbians who were specialists, actually, in caring for at-risk newborn babies. Tom Fast, at least until, well, this was back when we had a halfway decent Supreme Court in West Virginia. The Supreme Court finally had to intervene and tell him to shut the fuck up and sit down, because he insisted on tormenting these two women, saying that the baby, this was an at-risk newborn, okay? Needed near constant care. But Tom Fast said that it was dangerous for this child. Well, basically, he said the baby would be better off dead if it didn't have a man in its life. Because, you know, he's that kind of shitbird. Well, Kyle Duncan is that kind of shitbird. That case, of course, came out of Alabama, stripping a lesbian mother of her parental rights. He also filed a brief against marriage equality in Obergefell, in Virginia. He represented the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty in trying to keep a kid from going to the potty. I will never, ever cease to be amazed at the fascination of these right-wing perverts with bodily functions. But anyway, so he showed up to the lecture at Stanford, where he was met by Stanford students who frankly did not want to hear what this sack of horseshit had to say, because they knew he was going to bark and grunt and bray and bleat about, I don't know, getting people to take ivermectin to beat back the Rona. It was ridiculous. So they showed up with some signs, and you know what the students did? I know this is going to come as a complete and total and absolute surprise. The students heckled him. The students booed him. Him, Stuart Duncan, a member of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals of the United States and one of the most radical right-wing courts in the entire country. Those students at Stanford University had the unmitigated gall, the absolute temerity to boo and heckle him and say that they didn't want to hear what that ugly little goddamn fascist had to say. Well, eventually, the dean of diversity, equity, and inclusion stepped in with some remarks. Her name is Tyrion Steinbach, and people are calling for her head because she stepped in and made some remarks as associate dean of diversity, equity, inclusion, and inclusion. She spoke to the assembled lecture attenders there. And she said that she was made uncomfortable by the ideas that Kyle Duncan, I knew a guy named Stuart Duncan once, okay, that Kyle Duncan was going to talk on, and that she, Tyrion Steinbach, understood why they would be upset. So now you got people grunting on social media, Stanford DEI Dean Tyrion Steinbach should be fired, not for anything she said, but for commandeering a student event, fomenting the mob, and encouraging the violation of Stanford's own policy to enable the cancellation of a presentation by a sitting federal judge. Poor baby. You'd think they were throwing rotten tomatoes at him. Kind of wish they had. But they weren't. They engaged in free speech, which, of course, Kyle Duncan doesn't believe in. Unless maybe it's a January 6th defendant. And the students were not a mob. I watched the video. They sat there silently in their seats. Every now and then they do that hip, groovy beatnik thing where they'd give snaps to the associate dean for saying something that they agreed with. There was no hooting or carrying on of any sort. It was absolutely ridiculous. And then she, as a woman, had the unmitigated temerity. There's that word again. She had the unmitigated temerity to lecture Kyle Duncan on why it is that people were so upset with him. You know, because he's a hate-filled Federalist Society maggot. She said to him, among other things, that given the nature of what he was talking on, and the degree of upset that it had caused among those students who were paying a fortune for that education, by the way, they'll all have to go to work for some godforsaken pyramid scheme defense counsel law firm just to handle the student loans. But she asked him, "You make me wonder if the juice is worth the squeeze." And big old gangly white man that Kyle Duncan is, he tried to remonstrate, but then she stood up and she gave a bit of a speech, and she got the resounding approval of the students. And then when it was all over, and then before he started speaking, probably about half the room turned their back and walked out on him. In other words, they treated him with every bit of the disrespect that he treats God knows countless millions of Americans. But you can't do that to a delicate and dainty and sensitive member of the Federalist Society and former counsel for the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty. Fuckwit. And then he, because he is a delicate and dainty little fuckwit, turned around and demanded an apology from Stanford University, which the law school dean then tendered. Jenny Martinez is the law school dean. And then, yesterday, Stanford law students lined the hallways of the law school to protest the craven, spineless gutlessness of the law school dean, Jenny Martinez, for getting down on her knees and crawling on her belly to beg forgiveness of Kyle Duncan. We, the students in your constitutional law class, are sorry for exercising our First Amendment rights. One of the people said. And then Stanford University issued, Stanford University's president, Mark Tessier Levine, also issued a formal apology to Kyle Duncan. See, this is, they call it, remember the story yesterday about the snowflake in Iowa that had fascist in it? Yeah. This is who they are. They cannot operate on a level playing field. They cannot engage in debate. They have to be left solo to just spew their vomitous hatred at all and sundry. So when Dean Martinez's constitutional law class let out on Monday, out in the hallway there were protesters all dressed in black and wearing face masks that read counter speech as free speech, and they stared her down as she walked out. And this is impressive. The protesters for the dean were fully one-third of the entire law school student body. This is just so breathtakingly awful. There is no room in America now to protest a bigot. The silencing of dissent is a classic hallmark of fascism. And make no mistake, Kyle Duncan is a theocratic fascist. When he was, in fact, confirmed to the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, he was confirmed on a 50-47 vote. He got out of the Senate Judiciary Committee by one vote. And so, as I noted, he is a thin-skinned little martinet sack of dung. And consequently, in addition to demanding an apology from Stanford University Law School, he then gave an interview to the Washington Free Beacon, a birdcage liner out of our nation's capital. And let's be clear about what I just said. He gave an interview. They weren't simply quoting him from remarks he bellowed out on a street corner somewhere in D.C. He sat down and gave them an interview. And let's take this additional moment to note that it is true that the members of the Supreme Court of the United States are laws unto themselves. There is no one to hold them accountable whatsoever. And so it doesn't matter if they've actually accepted payment in exchange for a verdict. Nobody can do anything about it. But the same is not true of the judges below them. There's actually a code of judicial ethics which federal district judges, U.S. magistrates, and appellate court judges are supposed to follow. And like any other judge in the country, that code of ethics includes the commandment that a judge shall at all times avoid the appearance of impropriety. That means don't just do bad shit. Don't even get close to a place where people could think you have done bad shit. Well, like I said, he gave the interview to the Washington Free Beacon, in which he described the event at Stanford University as a bizarre therapy session from hell. You know, because kids not wanting the rights of themselves and their peers to be trampled by a theocratic fascist like Kyle Duncan, well, that's outrageous, man. Outrageous. And what Tyrion Steinbach said to him in the classroom was, your opinions from the bench land as absolute disenfranchisement of these students' rights. You have torn the fabric of this community. Do you have something so incredibly important to say that it's worth division of these people? And of course, the Washington Free Beacon is all full of him. Law students are shouting down conservative speakers. Well, maybe, it's called the marketplace of ideas. And maybe if your idea, if we're going to use the marketplace analogy, maybe if your ideas are the equivalent of a busted tomato soup can stinking of botulism. And see, that's the point. There is no merit. There is no conservative argument that has any merit whatsoever. None. At all. And so now that there is a younger generation rising up that wants nothing to do with this with this pustulant garbage, and don't feel like that the conservatives are owed a platform in which to burble it, well, now they're all butthurt. The Washington Free Beacon article references Kristen Wagoner, who is described as a prominent Supreme Court litigator. she's a sack of shit because she's an ultra, another ultra right wing maggot, theocrat. And of course, this ultra libertarian law professor named Ilya Shapiro, who leapt to Kyle Duncan's defense, he got hooted at and yelled at. Kyle Duncan said almost everybody in the room showed up to disrupt the proceeding. And they showed profane signs to him. Yes, they did. Because, of course, Kyle Duncan despises women. He's a stone-cold misogynist, of course, because he's a right-wing Christian. So a lot of the girls, young women in the class, brought signs that said the same thing. Duncan can't find the clit. And then when he started burbling his white wing garbage, they'd say things to him like, "Scumbag!" or "You're a liar!" And then he said, can somebody come here and help me? I'm a delicate and dainty right-wing snowflake, and these liberal Antifas, Black Lives Matter, CRT, DEI, MOUSE agitators are scaring me. Well, that's when Tyrion Steinbach showed up and explained to him why they were so upset, so that he would not be left out in the cold and be wondering why. And meanwhile, poor Tim Rosenberger, who is the president of Stanford's Federalist Society chapter, was there. Said, "No, none of the school administrators told the students to shut up so that Duncan could talk without being interrupted." One person looked at him in the question and answer session and said, "I fuck men. I can find the prostate. Why can't you find the clit?" Oh, that must have been terrible for him. He must have been so triggered. Of course, then again, considering the fact that he's a right-wing Republican... Yeah, well, I need not say more. You know, oh, and speaking of which, a little bit of a digression. Let me introduce you to, and thank you so much to our buddy John in Central PA. Let me introduce you to Mr. Chase Tristian Espy. Chase Tristian Espy. He was a high-ranking member of Alabama Governor Hee-Haw Meemaw's staff. You might recall that Hee-Haw Meemaw has been at war with women's reproductive rights, at war with trans kids, at war with, well, anybody who isn't, again, white and Republican and Christian. Well, staff attorney for Alabama Governor Hee-Haw Meemaw K. Ivey got sentenced, slap on the wrist, got sentenced to 8 years in prison in the last day or so because he was charged with and convicted of, wait for it, you already know, don't you? Unlawful contact with a minor. He was also in possession of more than 70 videos and photos of child sexual abuse materials. Let's go over a list of what staff attorney to Alabama Governor Kay Ivey, hee-haw, meemaws, what he wasn't. First of all, he wasn't a drag queen. Also, not a member of the LGBTQ community. But definitely a groomer, and definitely a pedophile. And all he got for all of that child pornography and for unlawful contact with a minor, and I don't even want to think about what that actually, what that means, what he put where on some innocent child, he got 8 years for it. Then when he gets out, he'll have 20 years of supervised release. Chase Tristian Espy is 37 years old, a 37-year-old heterosexual white man. So he'll do 8 years. Let's say he'll be out by the time he's 45. He'll be out by the time he's 41, the way they calculate shit. So, he'll be off supervised release by the time he's 61. And maybe, Meanwhile, his former boss, hee-haw, meemaw, was absolutely adamant that little raped children should have to carry their rapist's baby to term. And just a general reminder, Chase Tristian Espy is a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republican. Because it seems like they always are, doesn't it? But back to the story. Well, after Kyle Duncan had been escorted away by federal marshals because him was so scared, Well, the protesters then found the little Renfields from the Federalist Society and yelled some shit at them, too. Funny how these right-wing pieces of shit bray and bark about their First Amendment rights, but if anybody else exercises theirs, well, then it's intolerance of freedom of expression. But at the end of the day, Kyle Duncan speaking voluntarily, remember, with the Washington Free Beacon said,
don't feel sorry for me. I'm a life-tenured federal judge. What outrages me at these is that these kids are being treated like dog shit by fellow students and administrators.
Did I mention that he's a Christian? A very good Christian. The best kind of Christian. The kind that's so terribly, terribly concerned with uprightness and moral rectitude. And yet, he uses the word dog shit. To describe students. Remember when I mentioned earlier that a judge should always avoid the appearance of impropriety? I can't see how anyone who would deal with a complaint, on an ethics complaint against Kyle Duncan, could see such a reference in such a biased public forum as the Washington Free Beacon as anything but the appearance of impropriety. Oh, and he also demanded that the students, the young adults who exercise their right to free speech, should be punished. Ooh, Your Honor, maybe they should have to wear little pieces of barbed wire wrapped around their thighs or hair shirts or something. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. That's what you fucking weirdos do for fun. Dog shit. Dog shit. Judge Hatenstein, Stephen, New York, says, I'm going to disagree with you about a couple of things. I agree with Stanford allowing Judge Hatenstein to speak. Likewise, I completely agree with heckling and shaming him and so forth. The largest reason I support allowing him to speak is that it allows the students to do what they did. In addition, whether a judge is conservative, liberal, or whatever, we need to dispense with any unearned deference or respect for any judge. I can tell you the only reason I offer a judge any deference in New York is that my criticism could eventually hurt a client should I appear in front of that judge. In New York, many of the liberal or democratic judges are unworthy of respect because while they may rule in a way that favors how we as liberals may want them to, judges are corrupt as hell. I get that. Remember, y'all, I for a number of years, I practiced in front of a circuit judge in this state who was a real live, no kidding, I'm not exaggerating, Nazi. I'll never forget when Annette came up to my office one day and had Ferg and Doodle and Margie with them, and that judge looked at her and smiled and looked at our babies and said, my, oh, my, what pretty white skin they have. Not kidding. Yes, as a matter of fact, you are right, Lee in New York. Isn't that the source for the Steele dossier? It was, yes. It absolutely was. Ralph says, oh, poor baby. And thank you, Ralph, for jumping in on Matt's 50-mile-an-hour challenge. That means we've got $15 left to go on that. Remember, $25 gets us 50 more, which would knock down the fundraising goal to actually under $1,000, which would be fantastic. Because, well, if we don't make up a little ground this evening, there will be no stress line come tomorrow's program because of the constant struggle. Matt in San Francisco, subject line Chase, you know, Chase Tristian Espy, 8 years for illegal contact with a minor, and God only knows how many instances of child pornography. Matt says, if I was the judge, as part of his sentence, I would have required him to change his last name to Children. Chase Tristian Children? Matt, you're on a roll. You are. Chase Children. That's good. Kyle Duncan's look. Clarence says, Robin, you're spot on about Duncan's looks. I try to refrain from criticism of a person's appearance, but one look at this guy, I can't hold back. I remember a quote from my adolescent years. He looks like, who done it? What for? Please don't do it. Any motherfucking more. Yeah, see, he went to LSU and he studied real, real hard because he wanted to go out and fuck everybody that didn't think like he did. Kind of an intellectual rapist in a way. Take the Constitution out behind the barn. And, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Scary Jerry. I just got a cowbell. A spoken typo for a spoken typo. Thank you. be in New York, pale white skin. True, Robin, you've been claiming the palest skin for years, and yet it is. That's one of the few things about me that has not changed. I still have to slather myself in SPF Avogadro's number just to reach in under the refrigerator bulb and grab the bologna. Probably could have used a different term than that, but, well, every now and then the goddess of irony tweaks me on my little pink tomato nose. So that's Judge Kyle Duncan. And the whole reason that Ian Millhiser explained who Judge Kyle Duncan is that, well, here on the other side of the country today, a case landed in the Supreme Court of the United States. Styled, to my shame, West Virginia versus BPJ. It was brought at the behest of the Attorney General of West Virginia, one pill-pushing Patty Morrissey. In advance, my apologies to my friends in New Jersey, which I will be visiting soon. For the first time, well, no, not for the first time. It'll be for the second time, because I actually went to New Jersey to see, back years ago, Chris in Germany and Ferg and I and Tara Devlin went over to New Jersey to the Plains of Weehawken. Because I wanted to see where Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr dueled. So this will be my second time in New Jersey coming up. Remember, program note, hey, y'all, I know, but it's just worth the reminding. Please recall that I done been a begging and a pleading for you to like and subscribe to the podcast and imploring and a wheedling for you to leave a comment and mash upon that heart button there on the TuneIn player. And I'll let you know when we get to 1,000. I think that would be awesome. That's 1,000 just at TuneIn. Fantastic. Okay, Scary Jerry. Scumflake. Say it. Scumflake. Best speako ever. Ever. Spoken typo. I don't even remember doing that. It all flies back past so quickly. But anyway, West Virginia versus BPJ. The Attorney General of West Virginia is one pill-pushing Patty Morrissey. He's not even a West Virginian. I think you should at least be able to know that, say, Country Roads Take Me Home is barely about West Virginia at all to qualify, but nobody's quizzed him on that. I bet he doesn't know the state soil of West Virginia, Monongalia silt loam. Maybe he knows the state flowers, the rhododendron. Maybe he knows the state bird is the cardinal. I wouldn't bet on it. But he was elected in a right-wing spasm to be the Attorney General of West Virginia and set about going about the business of first and foremost attacking the rights of women to control their own reproductive systems. Prior to becoming Attorney General of the state of West Virginia, pill-pushing Patty Morrissey was a lobbyist for, wait for it, no, really, one of the companies that lit up the state of West Virginia with the opioid crisis. I'm not kidding. I wish it was. But no, lobbyists put him in the Attorney General position because they had work to do. And after he got done helping to immiserate the state with enough hydrocodone to paralyze every moose in Canada, well, he set about doing other ugly right-wing business. And so you may recall that I mentioned Joe Bob Goodwin a federal judge appointed by Clinton. Dude is now so old he farts dust. And he dissolved his own injunction a while back on West Virginia's transgender sports ban. I'm sorry all the stories touch on this, but this is the climate in which this country exists. West Virginia has one kid. One. O-N-E, one. One is the loneliest number that you'll... Right. One child who wants to run track and cross country in school and happens to be a trans girl. That's what the state of West Virginia has spent God knows how many thousands and tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars defending their legislation over. Joe Bob Goodwin gave an injunction and then dissolved the injunction. The ACLU took the case up to the Fourth Circuit, and the Fourth Circuit said, no, fuck no. Injunction is the injunction reinstated, at which point pill pushing Patty Morrissey, who has done more to hurt more West Virginians than any than one little girl wanting to run track is even capable of dreaming of, ran off to the Supreme Court. Remember, I mentioned it to you. He was engaged in a fraud upon the court alongside a bunch of these right-wing hate groups, tax exempt, of course, who have crafted out of whole cloth these arguments, claiming that it's about science or about Title IX, when in fact their own internal documents indicate that this is about a desire to impose their theocratic will upon the people of the entire United States. And so today in West Virginia versus BPJ, and that even the title of the case pisses me off. Because the fact of the matter is, he may have been elected by some majority of people who voted for him in this state, but more people voted against him and or not at all. And the idea that he gets to speak in my name and say that bigotry should be the order of the day in a state where the motto is "Mountaineers are always free," that was meant as a finger in the eye to old Virginia for its predilection toward enslavement? Oh, hell no. It does. It pisses me off. So they ran this up to the court to get it onto the shadow docket. We've heard about the shadow docket in the past. Recall the Texas bounty law in relation to women's reproductive health? That was a shadow docket case, too. And it does an end run on the entire Supreme Court process of briefing schedules and arguments and deliberations by the court. And so pill-pushing Patty Morrissey doesn't want to shilly-shally around with all those constitutional niceties. He wants a nice, quick ruling from Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Fappy Thomas and Sammy Bad Breath and Ann's boy Neil Gorsuch and Brat Kavanaugh and, of course, the handmaid, telling one lone little girl whose every day of her life is probably a goddamn struggle just to exist, that she just can't run on her high school's cross-country team. The entire power of the Attorney General's office is being bent toward depriving one little girl of her state constitutional right to all of her education. You know, I could almost swear that there was some historical something or another about it not being legal to deprive someone of an education based upon a personal trait? Here's the problem, though. If our most puissant Dread Sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties decide that they want to decide this thing on the shadow docket, it could be a matter of days. And what pill-pushing Patty Morrissey wants is a declaration by the court that discrimination against transgender people, in this case, one little girl, is subject to heightened scrutiny by the courts because it is discriminatory. I'm guessing there are probably, I'm hoping that there are four votes against. If one more could be found, this thing could be bounced. And then, I don't know, frankly, I think if that thing could be bounced, the taxpayers of this state should drag pill-pushing Patty Morrissey into court and demand that he pay personally out of his own damn pocket that was filled by pharmaceutical lobbyist groups and pharmaceutical companies themselves, compelled to pay every last damn dime the state of West Virginia spent defending this goddamned action. This is a little bit like the case we talked about yesterday with the crazy federal judge in Texas who is going to have the single say-so over whether a woman in California has access to mifepristone. RU 486. Yeah, Ralphs, BPJ is the little girl. So, if this thing goes south, know that there's a bunch of West Virginians who are just mortally ashamed that it's being done in our name. Whoever BPJ is, I hope she's okay. It's a little high school kid. We all know how hard adolescence is. Imagine waking up every day knowing that the Attorney General of your state hates your guts and would prefer that you unalive yourself. Of course, it goes without saying that pill-pushing Patty Morrison is a Christian. Of course he is, because Christianity, y'all, means hate. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, going back to Kyle Duncan for just a minute, I mentioned that there's a part of the Code of Judicial Ethics that says that a judge should at all times avoid the appearance of impropriety. Well, there's another part of the Code of Judicial Ethics that reads as follows. A judge should be patient, dignified, respectful, and courteous to litigants, jurors, witnesses, lawyers, and others with whom the judge deals in an official capacity. Dog shit. He shouldn't even be sitting on cases. Given the nature of his advocacy in the past, he shouldn't even be sitting on any cases involving gay men, lesbians, bisexuals, trans people, queer people at all. But, of course, he won't recuse himself because that's why he's there. As Ian Millhiser noted at Fox, the cruelty is the point. And now on to other things, shall we? There's an economist out there by the name of Nouriel Roubini. This has to do with the Silicon Valley Bank debacle, which it turns out was created in part by the fact that, no, not that Silicon Valley Bank was involved in green energy lending or anything. No. Silicon Valley Bank, Silvergate, and Signature Bank all were closed in relatively close proximity to one another. And they all have something in common. Now, by the way, we're still looking for that last $15 to meet Matt's challenge. It gets a little scary when we get this goose eggy 2 days in a row. No, but seriously, this is the biggest bank failure since the 2008 financial crisis that, of course, was predicated also upon Republican policies. But there's something else at work here. Nouriel Roubini, the economist, pointing out that Silicon Valley Bank, Silvergate, and Signature were three of the most important banking partners of cryptocurrency. They are literally crypto's biggest banking collapses. Nouriel Roubini despises crypto, and he said two words, good riddance. Actually, it was more than just good riddance. He said, all banks doing crypto biz are collapsing. Good riddance. He went on to say, mother of all moral hazards, rewarding scammers, crooks, human traffickers, criminals, and con men. But make no mistake, Nouriel Roubini is also an asshole. Because he described as sickening the fact that the federal government, the FDIC, remember, created by the same Congress and president that brought us Social Security, which the Republicans would love to kill. Nouriel Roubini said it's sickening that depositors at Signature Bank will have some of their losses covered by the FDIC. What is the logic of protecting the depositors of Signature Bank, a bank that recklessly decided to jump into the crappy crypto cesspool and bet the house on shitcoins biz? Of course, Nouriel Roubini also called the 2008 financial crisis. Speaking to Yahoo Finance Live at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Nouriel Roubini is kind of like the a financial Cato the Elder wandering around hollering, Cartago delenda est, Carthage must be destroyed. Well, Nouriel Roubini walks around saying, you got to stay away from crypto. You have to absolutely stay away. So the deregulation from the nitwit Nero era is part of it. And so, too, was the fact that out in Silicon Valley, these libertarian shitlords became fascinated with a libertarian concept of currency. Peter Thiel crashed Silicon Valley Bank on purpose, Scary Jerry says. Put me down for $5, so we're down to 10 to go. Hey, thank you, Kevin, up in Massachusetts. Okay, we are done with Matt's challenge. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So that gets us down to 985. Well, that's a long way to go. That means we are unfunded for today, yesterday, Friday, and $85 worth of Thursday. Thank you, though, Kevin. Thank you so much. And thank you, Scary Jerry. Randy Radar points out, you used to be able to buy crypto in one country and then abscond across a border to another country and then cash out the crypto anonymously, or so it was a type of bug-out insurance policy, but the U.S. may have broken the anonymity with powerful computers in a recent case of child pornography, thus possibly causing the crypto crashes. You don't think the United States caused the crypto crashes. I think crypto crashed because crypto has always been destined to crash because it is unregulated. It crashed like the gold-backed or silver-backed dollar crashed from time to time, like the pound sterling crashed from time to time. Because without regulation, economic systems go through a cycle of boom and bust that's as predictable as the rising and the setting of the sun. Mother of all moral hazards. That sounds like something W.C. Fields would say to them. Mother of all moral hazards. So, let me see here. Yeah, it just occurred to me. It is Tuesday, and that means we have Brad and Desi and the Green News Report. I like Tuesdays and Thursdays because I always enjoy hearing from those crazy kids. Multitasking. And then, of course, there's the question of whether or not, do we start World War III over a bad Russian pilot? Who ran into the propeller blade of an American drone over the Black Sea? Because that was a thing that happened today. We are not behaving in a bellicose fashion over it because we have a president who has an actual functioning human brain on his shoulders, kind of reassuring one in times like that. Our aircraft was a drone. Theirs was piloted probably by some drunk former prisoner. Pentagon said it was the drone crashed after an unsafe and unprofessional intercept. Two rickety Russian Su-27 fighters intercepted the MQ-9 drone and demonstrated what the Pentagon said was the lack of competence on the part of the proud, probably inebriated sons of Mother Russia. The operators of the drone brought it down. It wasn't shot down. President Biden was briefed on the incident. NSC spokesman John Kirby said it was not that surprising that Russian pilots have intercepted U.S. aircraft in recent weeks, but not in such a reckless manner. It is the first time that an intercept resulted in the splashing of one of our drones. The Russian jets dumped fuel on the drone and flew in front of it. Air Force General James Hecker, commander of the U.S. Air Force's Europe and Air Force's Africa, gave a statement saying, "Our MQ-9 aircraft was conducting routine operations in international airspace when it was intercepted and hit by a Russian aircraft, resulting in a crash and complete loss of the MQ-9. In fact, this unsafe and unprofessional act by the Russians nearly caused both aircraft to crash. In the name of glorious Mother Russia and heroic leader Vlad Putin." But General Hecker went on to say, "U.S. and allied aircraft will continue to operate in international airspace, and we call on the Russians to conduct themselves professionally and safely. These aggressive actions by Russian air crew are dangerous and could lead to miscalculation and unintended escalation." And they played chicken with the drone for about a half an hour before all the shit hit the fan. But cooler heads are prevailing. Mary Ellen O'Connell, an international law expert, said the U.S. has been successful to date in assisting Ukraine without direct confrontation with Russia. That approach needs to continue. Although Ukraine is becoming strapped for personnel with which to fight the war. Drone over the Black Sea, Jeremy in Vermont says, "I could argue that the pilot of the Russian plane did it on purpose. Do you know how close the pilot had to be to clip the propeller? It was not an accident or reckless flying. It just isn't. Sorry, we're trying to play it off given what's going around the Black Sea in general." Probably true, Jeremy. Back in D.C., over in House Judiciary, Chairman Jim Jacketoff Jordan is now two rounds of hearings into his FBI-DOJ investigation. It is not going well. Writing at Salon, Norm Eisen, Paul Michael, and Tom Jocelyn wrote, "Jordan's whole weaponization effort is an embarrassment. There's a right way to do oversight and to work with real whistleblowers, and, well, this isn't it. We see Jordan's far-right snipe hunt as a mockery. Neither weaponization nor whistleblowers were to be found last Thursday when the subcommittee held its second hearing focusing on the Twitter files. They went on to note, whistleblowers have played an important role in uncovering genuine executive branch abuses, including the Ukraine scandal that led to Donald Trump's first impeachment, but Jim Jacketoff Jordan," I added the Jacketoff part, "and his witnesses are not exposing real wrongdoing by government agencies. Instead, Jordan and the committee majority seek to justify the far right's imaginary grievances and conspiracy theories." Well, precisely. They're trying to come up with an ex post facto justification for the terrorist attack on the capital of the United States that people like Jim Jacketoff Jordan wholeheartedly supported. And they pointed out that in a minority report from the Democrats on the committee, they warn that nearly all of the Republicans involved in one of the subcommittee's investigations, the witnesses, some of the members, and certainly their outside operators, are tied together by the attacks of January 6, 2021. Because it's worth remembering that the final report of the J6 committee said that Jim Jacketoff Jordan was a significant player in attempting to aid Nitwit Nero in overturning the 2020 election. The three lawyers concluded saying Jordan and his colleagues risk making a mockery of whistleblower status. Their witnesses aren't legally recognized whistleblowers, and the weaponization subcommittee isn't genuine oversight. At some point in time, we'll find some breaking news here. I mentioned Social Security a little bit ago, alongside the creation by the 1930s Democratic Congress of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Yeah, it's no surprise to find out that the senior senator from Louisianistan, Senator Jubilation T. Cornpone Foghorn Leghorn John Kennedy, is not a fan of the $6.9 trillion budget proposal that President Biden released last week. Because he is a terminal, mush-mouthed smartass, Kennedy said, "Only way I know how to improve the president's budget is with a shredder." Well, that's not a bad John Kennedy impression, is it? I hadn't even worked on that. But here's the thing. Kennedy, who is fairly well educated, you know, Oxford there in England and everything. But then again, we used to think that Yale and Harvard meant something, too. Well, John Kennedy wants everybody to work till they're dead. Because he said, "Does it really make sense to allow someone who's in their 20s today to retire at 62? Those are the kind of things that we should talk about. President Biden is taking that issue totally off the table." I will note again that I was in my 20s and my generation was in our 20s when Ronnie Reagan and Tip O'Neill sat down and fucked our generation and fucked me out of being able to retire at something resembling a dignified age. And then John Kennedy hauled out that tired old canard about life expectancy. Now, this guy represents Louisianistan, where I would bet the life expectancy of a man there is probably something similar to the life expectancy of a man in, I don't know, McDowell County, West Virginia, which is actually less than the life expectancy of a rural individual in Guatemala. Because life expectancy, which once was on the rise for both men and women, is now going backwards. But he said, "Well, average life expectancy of the average American is about 77 years old and will likely grow to 85 or 90. Not by going backwards, dumbass. I mean, sure, Henry Kissinger is 167 years old or something. Sure, there are wealthy old white people
who are living to great age. But they never did much in the way of physical labor. They damn sure didn't work in the building trades. They didn't heave around on patients in hospitals. They didn't spend practically their entire lifetimes on their feet as teachers in schools. And I find it absolutely hilarious that John Kennedy thinks that somebody who's in their 20s today will retire at 62. Jesus, John Kennedy, I wish you'd retire at 62. I can't retire at 62. I mean, if it's even remotely possible that I can retire at 62, it'll be for $3.16 a month. But God, getting rid of Social Security is probably, I don't know, it may actually be more of a fetish object for Republicans than disenfranchising from voting everybody that they don't like. And when these arguments are based on abject stupidity, as this one is, people are going to live to be 100. Why should they get Social Security? You know what? They can work. They can keep on working when they're 80 and 85 and 90. People don't need Social Security who can work. Jesus. And then this. A piece over at the Daily Beast by Matt Lewis, who I see from time to time on my filthy morning habit. An opinion piece titled, and of course, remember, authors don't pick the title of their pieces, but this fits. I mean, when I saw this in my feed, I was like, oh, I'm going to stop and read this one. Probably going to regret it. You're going to miss Mitch McConnell when he's gone. And it's sort of a, I come not to praise Caesar, but to bury him sort of thing. It talks about the fact that Moscow Mitch had to go to the hospital, for which he had the best health care coverage in the entire world, when he trip, fall, and go boom and got a concussion. Lewis says, that was alarming to me, but not as alarming as the realization that McConnell is older than both Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Well, that's true. Steve in New York on life expectancy says, I have to say this. Who cares if people live to be 100 years old? This is all about shoring up Social Security. You know how we do that? We don't have to raise the retirement age. We don't have to cut benefits. Hell, we could cut the retirement age. Here's the solution. Get rid of the fucking cap on taxation. Hell, do this. Get rid of the cap and decrease the tax rate by 1 percentage point. With no cap and a lower rate, Social Security will be seriously flush. Oh, and fuck that Louisiana saltine. That's a cowbell for Louisiana saltine. Yeah. Ditch the cap, and Social Security is good. But Republicans can't do that because that would mean that Social Security kept on being alive. The goal is killing Social Security. Well, I'm back to Nouriel Roubini for a second. Flavio says, I know about him through Charles Ferguson's 2010 documentary Inside Job about the 2008 financial collapse. That documentary is not to be confused with the 9/11 Truther documentary of the same name, which is a crock of shit. True. Yeah, Roubini predicted 2008. He's just, well, you know. Some economists just aren't very pleasant folks. I mean, that's why they call economics the dismal science. Hint, it's not a science. But anyway, Matt Lewis says, no, this isn't another column lamenting America's gerontocracy. And goes on and says McConnell has the energy and acuity of a 55-year-old man.
He does. And he also has the heart of a 55-year-old man, and he keeps it pickled in a jar on his desk. What he does point out, though, is that McConnell's absence... Oh, that's true. It's not Muddle Russia no more, says Brother Deacon Asa, going back to the drone story. It has a new name, remember? Yes, from yesterday. Muddle Muscovy. Thanks for the reminder. But Matt Lewis, of course, has to get in a dig at Joe Biden and says and refers to a guy named Dan McLaughlin who puts words in a row for the National Review, the home of American white supremacy. McLaughlin said one of Queen Victoria's children was still alive when Joe Biden was born. So was Orville Wright. So was Grover Cleveland's widow. Martin Luther King Jr. was 13, Elvis was 7, Anne Frank had been in hiding for 4 months in a country whose exiled queen had sat on the throne since 1890. Well, isn't it funny how time works? I mean, frankly, I still think it's pretty cool that at my age, I knew people who were born in the 19th century. What does that mean? But Lewis says, yeah, all these things happened in McConnell's life, too. He even contracted polio as a child. He was present, which I thought, when Lyndon Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act of 1965. But what Lewis goes on to argue is that après Mitch... Le deluge. Because everybody behind him is, and it's kind of a grim thing to ponder, worse than Mitch McConnell. And that's what I took away from this opinion piece. Not, oh, Mitch McConnell's been an effective Republican leader in the Senate, but Jesus Christ, this guy's terrible, but everybody behind him is even worse. That's how bad Republicans are now. But he goes on to praise McConnell for, well, it's another one of those cases where, hey, look, here's a Republican who actually did the bare minimal thing that they should have done, given their oath to the Constitution. He gives props to Mitch McConnell for condemning Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, and testicle-toasting Tuckie O'Rose Carlson and their mashup of the January 6th footage, 40,000 hours of which the McCarthyite Speaker of the House gave him. He said that what McConnell did in denouncing Fox's rewriting of history was no small thing. And he said it could be so different if a different Republican were in McConnell's shoes. After all, his counterpart in the lower chamber, McCarthy, Kevers, provided the security footage to Fox News in the first place. And this is one of those centrist, bipartisan, both sides do it kind of crap pieces. He's in the autumn of his years. The end of the McConnell era is near. We should start preparing for it. Whether you are a liberal or a conservative, McConnell's exodus, whether that occurs, and let's hope it's a long way off, should be greeted with sadness and trepidation. Funny, his entire career has been nothing but sadness and trepidation. Over here on, ha, the left. What left? You'll never know how good you had it till it's gone. He's really the last bulwark against the barbarians at the gate, Matt Lewis closes. You know, in the waning days of the Empire, the Romans would hire good barbarians to oppose the bad barbarians. There were barbarians inside the gate as well as outside. And that was true at Constantinople in May of 1453, too. Oh, well. But in reading the piece, it sort of reminded me of, well, Joe Manchin. I get the fantods every time I think about 2024 and the Democratic position in trying to defend Senate seats. And I think about how thoroughly disgusted, absolutely nauseated I've been by the behavior of Joe Manchin. And I've known that he was a creeping, crawling, climbing, grubbing, coal-covered miscreant from his earliest days, orchestrating a campaign to elect a Republican governor in West Virginia over the Democratic nominee in 1996. But I told you a little bit about pill-pushing Patty Morrissey earlier. Well, there's also Alex Looney Mooney. And there's an actual convicted J6 terrorist who's now running for the congressional seat that Looney Mooney is going to give up. His name is Derek Evans. He was an active participant in the attack on the Capitol. Like I said, he's going to run for Looney Mooney's seat because Mooney is running for the Republican nomination for Senate to challenge Joe Manchin. Politics can be conflicting sometimes. Certainly is in this case. It would be nice to have somebody who could primary Joe Manchin and win in 24. I don't know if such a person is out there, or if it'll just be another vanity candidate to help raise money for other Senate races outside West Virginia. But I can tell you this for sure. Every single person who has written me an email or mentioned in a call or on a tweet or anywhere else how awful Joe Manchin is and why can't the people of West Virginia do better, every last one of them, if Joe Manchin does not win in 24 or his successful primary opponent doesn't win in 24, will have their words turned to ashes in their mouths. Because if a Republican gets that seat, whoo-wee! Yeah. Oh, and I did not mean to not mention this. This is a very big deal. This could get us down from 985 to almost half of that if, in the space of the remaining hour and 5 minutes in the program, we can raise $150. Our anonymous internet friend has said, I've got to have a show on me that says that if the Horn community can kick in $150 in a two-for-one, it's a two-for-one tripling challenge, I'll kick in up to $300 if that $150 comes in. So 985 minus That's 9:35. We could get down to 5:35, and we could make sure that we've got a stress line tomorrow, which is really a big deal, because there's somebody waiting on it right now. So I know it's kind of short notice, and it's only an hour, but that's 15 people at $10 or 10 people at $15. I know we struggled to get the first $25 in this evening. Thank you for meeting Matt's 50-mile-an-hour challenge. Thank you so much. So let's see if we can find $150 in an hour and 5 minutes. I mentioned Supreme Court ethics earlier. There are new model ethics codes being bandied about that would actually apply to the Supreme Court of the United States. A couple of government watchdog groups, Project on Government Oversight and Lawyers Defending American Democracy, POGO and LDAD, are proposing more stringent guidelines for recusal. This is fascinating because the guidelines, as described by that fish wrap, the Washington Examiner, would be so strict that if they were in effect last year, it may have prevented the High Court's eldest Republican-appointed justice, you know, Fappy, from participating in a case involving the release of Trump administration records to the House committee investigating the January 6th Capitol riot. They still call it a riot over at the fish wrap. It was a terrorist attack. Well, I say, bring it on. Nina Totenberg over at NPR reported on it last week. And the idea that there would be stringent enough rules that it would actually make Supreme Court justices behave something in the same solar system with ethically, which at this point in time we do not have. It's called the Model Code of Conduct for U.S. Supreme Court Justices. And it contains language along the way. I find it interesting. Quote, certain conduct by a spouse or other close family member of a justice would require that justice to recuse. It's getting some legs. A group called Fix the Court endorsed the proposals. And said that one of the things that's missing in the current code for judges lower than the Supreme Court is, well, there is no express enforcement mechanism, and the current Supreme Court code, such as it is, doesn't have one either. Because, again, as I said earlier in the program, at this point in time, Supreme Court justices are a law unto themselves. And so that means that Ginsurrectionist Thomas can engage in anti-American behavior in which she supports the overthrow of a presidential election at the same time that her hubby is opposing a release of records that went on to make clear the association of his wifey with Nitwit Nero's coup attempt. It would be great if this went somewhere, but somehow or another it has to be adopted. Nina Totenberg reported, such a provision would clearly have forbidden Justice Clarence Thomas from participating in a 2022 case involving the release of Trump White House records to the House Committee for J6, and adds that he was the only justice to dissent when Nitwit Nero said, you gotta protect me. And the rest of the court said, no, we don't. And Fappy said, well, no, don't do that, Robin. Okay. One individual cited by Nina Totenberg is NYU law professor Stephen Gillers, and he said the only reason the court doesn't want this code of conduct for itself is that justices, quote, don't want to be pushed around. They don't want the clamor. Because you're not the boss of me. They have lifetime tenure. They're laws unto themselves. Nitwit Nero isn't the only person who could gun somebody down in the middle of Fifth Avenue and get away with it. So could Fappy. So could Sammy Bad Breath. I continue to think that that's not how the framers, you know, because I'm an originalist, meant it to be. Thank you, Ralphs, jumping in on the challenge. Thank you so much. Thank you, Charlene and Rogues Island, jumping in on the challenge. And hey, thank you, Gino. Gino out in Utah. Taking care of the challenge. So we're actually going to get down from, let's see. We're down below $450. To fill in the hole. So that means all of last week is funded. That's amazing. And look at that. It didn't even take 10 minutes to meet our kind internet friends free for one challenge. That is nothing short of amazing. Thank you so much. Thank you so much indeed. If we went a little further, that would be awesome too. And we just did. Now, thanks to Shorty in L.A., Shorty and Gino, y'all are amazing, as are Charlene and Rogues Island and Ralphs. Thank you. Because everything's funded but today now. We're all caught up for everything but today. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Well, can't not do this story. got to. I mentioned Charlene and Rogues Island, and Rogues Island is a reliably blue state. I'm going to visit there one of these days. I really want to. See the beautiful sailing yachts out off of Providence. It's got to be beautiful. And I've already heard that the food is fantastic. So, everybody in Rogues Island isn't awesome. No. Danny Lemoy of Foster, Rhode Island, wasn't awesome. You'll notice we're using the past tense here. Danny Lemoy of Foster, Rhode Island, picked up a case of Lyme disease back in 2012. And that's when he started dosing himself, Jesus, with horse paste. No, really. He started back in 2012 giving himself a daily dose of veterinary-grade ivermectin. And he quit all the other drugs for humans that he had been put on to deal with that horrible disease. And he brayed and barked and, well, did kind of an end zone dance over the fact that ivermectin had miraculously regenerated his heart muscle. This veterinary-grade ivermectin was intended for, like, cows and horses. He had a Telegram channel. Remember, Telegram is owned by Mother Muscovy. Where he promoted the use of horse paste. It's got a delicious apple flavor. And on his Telegram channel, somebody put up a statement for him, the administrators. He had administrators for his Telegram channel. That tells you a little something about the size of the Telegram channel, doesn't it? Though it was obvious that Danny had the biggest heart, it was unbeknownst to him that his heart was quite literally overworking and overgrowing beyond its capacity. Nearly doubled in size from what it should have been, we understand that this is going to raise questions for those who are following him.
Because the people who were following him on Telegram, because mostly they were COVIDiots. Anti-vaxxers. People who drink a pint of pee-pee every day and wear onions in their socks. And Danny Lemoy of Foster, Rhode Island, was out there giving dosing instructions. And this is the part that just makes you want to break down and just weep for the rest of the program. There were people following this freak who were dosing their children with ivermectin because their children were autistic. God damn it! When I saw this, I immediately thought of the story from, a couple of years ago about the godforsaken freaks who should never have been parents who were administering bleach and mercury enemas to their children because they were autistic. As if autism is a disease. When all it is a form of neurodivergence. It's just a way of one's brain being different. Danny Lemoy died on March the 3rd, and then some of his dedicated followers began talking about what was happening to them. One of these mouth-breathing knuckle walkers said,
"I'm 4 months now and all hell's breaking loose. All pain has hit my waist down with sciatic shin splints, restless leg syndrome, tight sore calves, and it feels like some pain in the bones."
Well, the damnedest thing about all of that is that everything that they're describing are things that, you know, the people who produce ivermectin say, well, you can expect these side effects if you take this when you shouldn't. Another dipshit said,
"I'm very new to this. I've been on Bimectin paste for 20 days. I have severe chest pain, costochondritis symptoms,
air hunger." Air hunger?
"Internal tremors, brain fog, headaches on the back of my head, anxiety, depression, doom and gloominess."
All because they didn't want to take a, you know, vaccine. Air hunger? I wonder if Joe Rogaine's out there still hustling horse paste. Alex Jones. And I love how at the bottom of these stories, news poll, have you ever taken ivermectin for parasite-related symptoms? No! Nor to ward off the Rona. Weirdly enough, I actually followed through on that little poll. 84% of people said no, and I wasn't interested. Five percent said, "Yes, I tried ivermectin for parasite-related symptoms." You know, river blindness, which one gets in Nigeria. 0% said yes, but it did not work. 1% said... 1% of the people answered that poll question and said, "No, but I wanted to."
Dude, let's do some ivermectin. It could be cool.
"No, but I wanted to." The apple flavor seemed appealing. Mother. Let's run over to the stress line and see who we got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Robin, it's me, Reggie, from Decatur, Georgia, man.
Well, hey, Reggie, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing just fine, Robin. It's a beautiful sunny day out here.
I'm glad somebody's getting one. My kneecaps are so damn cold I can't feel them right now.
Well, it'll be spring in about a week or two.
Not here. It snowed about two inches this morning. It was like, damn!
Right. Well, did you set your clocks up for an hour ahead?
Oh, everything's self-sets here.
Yeah, right. Well, we still have clocks and watches, you know. You know what I mean, Robin?
Oh, I do. You're old school.
Yeah. So, how do you feel about people like such as Marjorie Taylor Greenwald attacking Jane Fonda on her stance on abortion? Because, Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin were on The View just this past week talking about that.
Oh, I saw that. I saw that.
Yes. I thought you would. I thought you would. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, of course, Jane Fonda had to backpedal and apologize because what she said she didn't mean.
Well, what she did, okay, for people who don't know, Jane Fonda and Lily...
You can explain it a whole lot more than I can.
Yeah, Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin did an appearance on The View, and they were actually there promoting
a movie.
A movie that involves murder. I think it's a comedy.
Yeah. Right.
And I forget, maybe it was Joy Behar asked Jane, how do you feel about people like Marjorie Taylor Greene who oppose a woman's right to choose? Some language like that.
Right. Right.
And Jane Fonda, with a grin on her face, said, oh, I don't know, murder? Because, again, the movie is about two old ladies who commit murder.
Right.
Well, this immediately sent marginal trailer queen into spasms, at which point she pogo-sticked up onto the cross.
Right.
And hollered, Jane Fonda wants to murder me!
Right.
She's an idiot, Reggie. She's an idiot.
Yeah, she is an idiot.
Marge, not Jane. Jane's amazing.
Right, right. Right. I mean, for her to attack an 85-year-old woman like that is, like, idiotic, let alone ridiculously moronic and stupid and childish and petty and immature and irrational. And dare I say or mention, let alone insane, psychotically insane, never mind, he says some.
And this is not a critique, and I hope I won't get any shit for this.
You won't. Don't worry, Robin. You won't.
I think Marge is. Well, hell, she might be neurodivergent or something. I don't know. She's differently brained, that's for sure.
Yeah. Right.
Whereas Clanny Oakley, Lauren Boebert, she's just stupid.
Right.
And there's no law of nature that says a stupid person can't make it to Congress. You know, we can go all the way back to Mark Twain.
Yeah.
Mark Twain in the 19th century writing, suppose you were a member of Congress, and suppose you were an idiot, but I repeat myself.
Right.
That was the 1800s when Mark Twain said that.
Right.
So, stupid members of Congress...
Uh-huh.
Well, they're kind of a known quantity, let's say. Would you agree? Reggie?
Why? I don't know.
I don't know. I lost you there for a second.
I said, why? I don't know.
Reggie? Yep, I lost Reggie. Doggone it. These things happen. Okay, yeah. Oh, and there's a little bit of good news. It's one of those moments where you go, oh, no, really? The Biden administration approved last week what's being described by Reuters as a pared down version of the what's called the Willow Project on federal lands on Alaska's north coast. We need this like a tank needs a kickstand. Of course, drilling in Alaska has long been a fetish object for the right wing. And the Biden administration said, no, you ConocoPhillips, you can't do everything you want, but we're going to let you do some of it. because ConocoPhillips has been sitting on leases in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, since 1999. Nitwit Nero approved it in full back in 2020. But a year later, a district court judge named Sharon Gleason said, uh-uh, and blocked it and because she said the environmental impact statement was a bunch of bullshit. She didn't use that language. You got to go to somebody like Kyle Duncan to get, you know, some dog shit. But ConocoPhillips was absolutely beside itself with joy at the possibility of ruining one of the last wild places in the United States. It is a nightmare, the Willow Project is. It could be the absolute end of the Northern Alaska Arctic. Bridget Sariano, senior staff attorney for Trustees for Alaska, said, we have some serious questions about whether this decision actually complies with the court's order from August of 2021. We'll be looking closely at how the Bureau of Land Management is considering alternatives and what its final approvals are. One of the things that Judge Gleason said was that the Trump Interior Department failed, I would say refused, to account for greenhouse gas emissions from foreign, get this, foreign consumption of Willow's oil. Because, once again, gasoline users, of which I am one, that oil is not going to go to U.S. consumers. It's going to be put on the global oil market. And the senior attorney for the Center for Biological Diversity, a group that I highly respect, Kristen Monsell, said it's still inadequate in numerous respects. The Biden administration cut back on the number of well pads they said that ConocoPhillips could have, but they're still going to be able to get, at least under the present plan, 90% of the oil that it said it wanted to get at the outset. Now, how you let ConocoPhillips get 90% of the oil it wants and maintain a commitment to reducing greenhouse gas emissions, well, it plumb evades me. And frankly, truth be told, it's disappointing. I can't imagine what it must be to be like Inupiaq or Inuit in Alaska and know that this thing got the final green light from an indigenous American, you know, Deb Haaland. That's got to feel like a little bit of a shiv. Or then again, maybe she raised hell. I wonder if she threatened to resign. My favorite, absolutely favorite, environmental litigation firm, Earth Justice, said, we're probably going to sue. And Eric Grafe said, it doesn't look like Interior has fixed the myriad legal flaws that Earth Justice and others identified for the agency prior to its decision. And then there's ConocoPhillips itself. It was just last year when they leaked, 7.2 million cubic feet of natural gas at their Alpine oil field. That forced the evacuation of somewhere between 300 and 400 of the workers they had on site. And on the scene, regulators still haven't figured out how they, how ConocoPhillips fucked up and did that. the thing that I find curious is that in all of this discussion of Willow, which I have followed for a while, there's not a single mention of Deb Holland. Doesn't that seem a little odd that something as momentous as this would not even have, and this is Reuters, they're not terrible. Something as big a deal as this, and you don't even mention the name of the Secretary of the Interior? The Reuters copy says, President Joe Biden's administration approved a trimmed-down version, blah, blah, blah. Well, Deb Holland is Secretary of the Interior and thereby a member of President Joe Biden's administration, unless I missed the memo. Any ideas? Anybody? Bueller? Oh, and since we've already mentioned testicle-toasting Tuckio Rose Carlson, it looks like he's beginning to have a little bit of a feud. Gently, of course, because remember, in the memos, he talks about how we're killing the brand by not going along with Nitwit Nero's lies about the 2020 election. Shortly after it became public knowledge that Tuckio Rose said that he hated Nitwit Nero passionately, he was responding to questions from some dude named Kyle Forgeard. Forgeard? I don't know. Kyle, this is apparently an evening about people, about right-wing assholes named Kyle. Kyle asked him about what Nitwit Nero said about how he could...
I could have just called, you know, Putin never invaded anybody while I was president. I would have just called him and said, you know, don't do that, Putin. It's not a great idea. And he wouldn't have done it. Biden is weak.
Responding to Kyle Forgeard's question, Tuckio Rose said, I saw Trump said he could close that in 24 hours if he wanted to. Oh, that was Forgeard. You think he could? I have no idea, said Tuckio Rose. I mean, he couldn't build a border wall in 4 years. So, you know, there's a gap between promises and delivery with all politicians, very much including him. Oh, and then damning with faint praise. But I will say, in Trump's defense, and maybe because he's a little bit autistic, he saw the stakes of this. Well now, Tuckio Rose, you want to give him some ivermectin? Because he's a little bit autistic? You want to check the Telegram channel, Tuckio Rose? A little bit autistic. We have suggested on this program from time to time that Nitwit Nero may be special needs. Because who else's mommy says to him, oh, who's my big smart boy? Who's got a very big brain? Oh, who goes potty all by himself now that he's old, 7 years old? That's my Dunny. Right? Okay, back to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
I'm back, Robin. My house phone cut off.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Reggie.
Unexpectedly. But now I'm back. So, oh, yeah, we were talking about the psycho green, you know, Markovich. Right. Marge and Kelly.
Marge. Yeah.
Marge. You know, the psycho Marge. You can use that one if you want to. Robert.
Marge, who wants to be in charge.
Exactly. And like I, as I said before, I mean, Jane Fonda said all that stuff in the View as jest. I don't think he was actually serious. I think he was, what they call it, kidding or joking. And Joy said they'll take it and use it, and guess what? They already have and did.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, the conniptions were right out there.
Right. Their heads exploded, right, Robin? Especially her. Were they even thinking about her personally or what? I mean, you know.
Well, everything's about
they
her.
They weren't even. Oh, narcissism. Right?
Sure.
Yeah, narcissism. And, you know, they were talking about something else. Not her, but it's like they do it to, you know, it's like we have to apologize to them, but they can't do it for us, you know.
Sure.
You know.
And, yeah.
And, you know, and why can't she apologize for all the things she said over the years, you know, attacking, you know, Jane Fonda.
Jewish space lasers.
AOC and the, yeah, exactly. Of course, she attacked AOC, you know, Representative in Ilhan Omar, she attacked her, you know, and everybody else. But when it comes to her, it, you know, why are they attacking me, you know?
Right.
Why, you know, why me? And do you think that's fair, Robin?
Well, it has nothing to do with fair or unfair. It just has to do with the fact that, like I said, morons getting elected to Congress, if you've got enough morons in a district, a moron can win.
Right. Right. And, you know, right. And, you know, it's like freedom of speech is becoming, well, I hate to say this, but it's like freedom of speech is becoming literally dead in this country. And you can't speak your mind anymore without bending over backwards and having to apologize for it. Am I crazy, Robin? Am I wrong?
No, you're not crazy at all.
So, you know, that's what it's come to. It didn't used to be like this at all. It was it? No. How did it come like this, man? How did it come to this?
Well, you know, I mean, you can go back to the early 1960s and Richard Hofstadter and the paranoid style in American politics. That's a really good a really good primer for understanding how we got here.
Right. And what about
and,
somebody
you know, Ronnie Reagan?
Right. Yeah.
Now,
don't forget two presidents before him, you know. Tricky Dick, you know, Mr. Paranoia, Tricky Dick.
Absolutely.
You know, Mr. Enemies List. It wasn't that illegal for him to do that, Robin?
I don't know. I don't know if Richard Nixon could take a pee toward the end of his presidency without violating the law, frankly.
Why do you say that, Robin?
Because he was a crook.
Right. What about Ronnie Wilson Ray Gunn, as you would call him? What exactly was he?
He was just a fraud.
Why do you say that, Robin?
Yeah. Because he held himself out to be something that he wasn't.
Uh-huh.
People thought that he was some kind of Christian. He wasn't.
Right.
People thought that he was an intelligent man. He wasn't. People thought he was a moral individual. Uh-huh. He wasn't.
Uh-huh. Right. Don't forget about the two Bushes. You know.
Sure. Sure, and I found, I saw a remark earlier today, or an article that said that, you know, George W. Bush was the beginning of alternate fact America. And that's true.
Ooh, I wonder who wrote.
I can't think of it offhand, but what the assertion of the article was, you know, when we started pushing notions that Iraq had yellow cake uranium from Niger, or there were mobile weapons labs and aluminum tubes, that was all just entirely made up horseshit.
Right.
And not a damn thing to be done about it, and people fell for it. Simpletons.
Yeah. And don't forget about the news media. They fell for it too, man.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, right. And I guess parts of Congress, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
I remember when Robert Byrd begged on the floor of the Senate of the United States for the Senate to at least slow down the rush to war. But the Republicans were literally hell-bent on destruction. So away they went.
Yeah. Right. Well, you don't think that. So do you think that President Joe Biden is doing all he can to keep this country from going straight to hell in a handbag, you know, to keep it afloat, you know. You know, he signed the guns bill, the AR-15 guns bill, you know, requiring background check. Do you think that'll pass or what?
Reggie, nothing good is going to come of this Congress, because this Congress has a majority of people who are nothing good.
Right. So it won't be passed or stalled. Oh, it'll be stalled, right?
Oh, well, we got a minor league gun safety measure that wasn't much of anything at all, but it was something toward the end of the last Congress. Again, nothing of any value is going to come out of this Congress. These dumb Republicans can't even find it in themselves to honor their own oath to the Constitution and raise the damn debt ceiling.
Right.
So.
I hope they're not trying to destroy. Go ahead.
No, just.
I hope they're not trying to destroy Social Security, man.
Well, of course they are. That's been their goal since FDR signed the Social Security Act in 1934? 89 years ago?
Yeah, I need it. My mama needs it. Everybody else needs it.
Exactly. But they don't care. You know what? John Kennedy, that story I mentioned earlier, John Kennedy of Louisiana Stan, you know, he showed what their thinking is. They'll let the people who have it now keep having it. The goal is to destroy it for generations behind them, generations like mine. Generations like yours.
Right. Right. But, you know, what about people who have disabilities or, you know, that can't work? Or people who are senior citizens?
Oh, they've got to go, too.
Fully officially retired.
No, they've got to go, too. Oh. Republicans don't give a shit about them, Reggie.
What if, unless it's one of their own, right?
Well, if it's one of their own, they don't need Social Security. They're already wealthy.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I want it. Yeah, but, you know, nothing lasts forever, Robin, right? Nothing lasts forever.
Well, we were kind of hoping Social Security would, and it can, if we just lift the damn cap. If we just lift the damn cap.
Right. But like you say, they won't do that. They won't do that. Now, if the House was a majority Democrat, that'd be different. Correct?
Right.
Yeah, but it's not. I hope the Democrats up in Congress are safe, man. I don't want to see anything happen to them, you know, like death and violence and whatnot. You know, especially where AOC and Ilhan Omar are concerned. What say you, Robin?
I don't know, Reggie. What say you? I mean, we know how violent the right wing is. You know, yeah, right wingers like Kyle Duncan piss and moan and cry if somebody says something insulting to them. On the other hand, the right wing kills people. Usually with weapons meant for warfare.
Right.
Yeah.
Snowflake.
Well, listen, Reggie. I hope you have a good evening. I'm about to wrap things up here.
Okay, man.
You stay safe. Enjoy the warm weather.
You too.
Keep people like us in mind who are still up here freezing.
Right. Well, I hope the warm weather comes up to you, and when springtime finally arrives.
Oh, it'll get here eventually. It will.
Right. I hope that this summer is not as hot as he's going to claim it's going to be, or as hot as he's claiming it's going to be.
Well, where you are hot is...
Well, I live in Decatur.
Hot is hot where you are. I'll take as hot as we can get up here.
Right. Over the ice and snow.
Damn right. I might get warm again by August. Reggie, take care, hon. Right. You be good, all right?
Yeah, you too, Robin. Don't work too hard.
Well,
don't work too hard.
Talk to you later.
Don't let the Republicans or the GOP get you down, you know, or get the very best of you, man. Don't let them do that neither.
I'm going to try not to. I try not to every day. Take care, Reggie.
Right.
Bye now.
You too, Robin.
Bye.
Bye now.
Reggie's a good guy. We went a long time without hearing from Reggie. I'm glad he's okay. Here's one I found interesting. BBC's World News America has been around for a while. BBC World News America has won an Emmy or two. And they have a host there, what the folks in the UK refer to as a news reader or a news presenter, which is far more accurate than what the reference is here. Laura Trevelyan has called it quits after a 30-year career with the Beeb. This morning, she tweeted, "A new chapter is starting for me. After 30 incredible years at the BBC, I'm leaving tomorrow to join the growing movement for reparatory justice for the Caribbean. Thank you to my beloved colleagues and to our amazing audience. I couldn't be more grateful to you all." She was roundly and soundly thanked by the executive staff of the suits at the BBC. A guy named Paul Royal said, "Hello, everyone. I'm writing to let you know that Laura Trevelyan will be leaving the BBC to take on a new role building on her extensive reporting on the issues of reparatory justice." Excuse me. Laura has been a distinguished reporter and presenter at the BBC for 30 years, covering some of the biggest stories of our time. Her reporting career at the BBC began in Northern Ireland after the IRA ceasefire. As a Today program reporter, she was there in Belfast as the Good Friday Agreement was negotiated and signed. Later, she was a political correspondent at Westminster during the heated debates over Britain's support for the Iraq War. After her move to the U.S. in 2004, Laura traveled the world as a United Nations correspondent, reporting from Myanmar during Cyclone Nargis. As New York correspondent, she reported extensively on the legacy of the 9/11 attacks. Since 2012, Laura's been an anchor and correspondent for the Emmy Award-winning broadcast World News America, interviewing newsmakers in the studio and reporting on location from Haiti, Mexico, Cuba, and Brazil, from Hurricane Sandy to the hunt for the Boston Marathon bomber. Laura has always excelled as a live reporter in the field, including reporting from Donald Trump's election night party in 2016 as his victory unfolded and outside the U.S. Capitol on 6 January. We wish Laura well with her new role and thank her for her many outstanding contributions to the BBC's output over the last three decades. Wonder why. It turns out that Laura Trevelyan called it quits a few weeks after tendering her apology for the fact that her ancestors were enslavers in the Caribbean. She went so far as to sign off on a letter saying, "We apologize for the actions of our ancestors in holding your ancestors in slavery," in a letter to the people of Grenada. It also, on the other hand, comes on the heels of announcements by the BBC in merging its international and domestic news channels. Some of their other anchors, David Eads, Joanna Gosling, and Tim Wilcox, took what is referred to in British English as redundancy, which is another way of, they got the sack. Now, I guess that would be called a layoff or early retirement, as we call it here. And then 10 of the most seasoned of the BBC's anchors were sacked in anticipation of the relaunch of the BBC next month. I don't know if she knew that her head was on the block and that by going this route, she got a nice farewell from Paul Royal, the guy who wrote the glowing thingamajig that I just read. Or if this is more a matter of seeing Mani Mani Tekel Upharsin on the wall and having read decided to attend to her best interests. And just as sort of proof, because honest to God, sometimes I feel bad about it because a few of you have raised issues and said, you know, you'd be fine if you never heard another story about the LGBTQ community again. I understand that. I don't agree. But just to give you an idea of things that show up in my feed, and this is stuff, this isn't stuff in the mainstream media. This is stuff over at Fox or the Washington Free Beacon or the Washington Examiner or the Washington Birdcage Liner. And they all have these clickbaity headlines. This is from Fox News about a family in the UK. Staying with the UK theme for a moment. Hi, Claire. Hey, Jean. Hey, Anne. This is the headline. Parents pull 4-year-old from church school for promoting gender identity lessons. Cruel deception. Cruel deception? And, of course, it has something to do with
an asshole named Stephen Evans, the father of the Christian parent.
It's just a minefield, and children should not be subjected to this agenda,
he said over at the school at St. Mary's Prittlewell. When they said they were going to be reading a book to the children, a children's book called My Shadow is Pink. And it's all about a little boy who likes to wear dresses. And it's suitable for children 3 and up, and it's got sort of Dr. Seussian rhyme schemes, little couplets. Your shadow is pink. I see now it's true. It's not just your shadow. It's your innermost you. But these Christian parents and some schlub at Fox News read it and wrote a news story about it. Well, they don't want their little child learning not to hate other little children. Curiously, St. Mary's Prittlewell is in Essex, which ironically is where a shit ton of my, it's a complicated genealogical term, shit ton, where a shit ton of my ancestors come from. This has absolutely no pertinence, no relevance, no meaning. I mean, you talk about me talking about this too much. I abjure you, please do not watch Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, or the Daily Wire caller, whatever. Because it's almost wall-to-wall at those outfits. Because it's really, really good for keeping Emery and Marvelline in a state of absolutely frothy dudgeon. For some reason that I don't understand. I don't spend time sitting around thinking about what other people do in the privacy and intimacy of their relationships. Okay, yesterday I did talk about Heidi Cruz probably pegging Ted Cruz, but that was kind of a rarity. You know, pulling on his ponytail, or actually pulling on his mullet. It's absolutely disgusting. And that's just one story. I mean, this being Titanic Tuesday and all, it doesn't get much more Titanic than this, Titanic intellect. But one does not dare talk about real issues that affect people when you're over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Here's another one to keep Emery and Marvelline in that state of frothy dudgeon. Again, it's out of the UK, where a Roman Catholic priest is having a conniption. Reverend Patrick Pulisino, aged 73, who used to be a neurologist with the NHS, and then when he retired decided to take holy orders and became a priest at Southwest London and St. George's Mental Health NHS Trust, where he was well aware of the trust's policy on diversity and equality. Well, he's suing because back in 2019, a patient at the NHS hospital asked the priest to take a walk with him, and told the priest that he was in a relationship with a same-sex partner and that his father did not approve.
and the patient asked this befrocked goon what he thought about the fact that he, the patient, had a boyfriend. And so, having given an interview to Fox News, the priest responded, "So I said to him, well, what do you think God would say about that?" This is a Catholic asking a Catholic chaplain, obviously within a secular hospital, but he obviously wanted Catholic doctrine, but that's all I would give anyway. I didn't try to push it on him. I just sort of laid it out to try to open his mind slowly about it, and it wasn't a confrontational talk. And so I told him to try and make up with his father. Particularly people with psychiatric illness, they definitely need the family support, so I didn't share too much more. Now here is a man who is obviously in a behavioral health crisis, who needs to hear that he's an okay human being, but instead he winds up being gently castigated for putting his boyfriend above his sainted pappy. And so, rightly, the trust shit-canned the priest. But just as in the United States, there are grifts in the UK, like the Christian Legal Center, who are, and it's all tax-free, hallelujah, helping him sue the trust, alleging harassment, religious discrimination, and victimization. Yeah, this guy's been an asshole for a while. He also attacked in 2019. He attacked an end-of-life protocol for people who wanted to exercise some agency over how they shuffled off this mortal coil. But the bigotry will always out. Because he said after he got sacked, psychiatric patients are extremely vulnerable. They need support, and they particularly need spiritual support. Because with some of the psychiatric problems, like schizophrenia, there's a blurring between spiritual and personal dimensions, which can really upset patients. Spiritual support is extremely important for these people. And the hospital has gone out of its way to hire more Muslim chaplains, even though there are relatively few Muslims on the separate aisle. Those weren't quotes, this is. It's like they're bending over backward to support and bring in a religion like that. You know, a religion like that. Whereas Christianity, they're pushing out. It's sad, really. But I do hope to cash a rather tasty fat check. And I'm keeping it all for myself. Because of course I will. I added that part too. But this is what they feed their audiences. This is how they keep them in a state of high dudgeon. You know, in between yelling, "Joe Biden is senile!" And that's how we got where we are. And Fox exists, of course, because of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, signed into law by Bill Clinton. Bless their heart, the Southwest London and St. George's Mental Health NHS Trust said, "Whilst we can't comment on active legal proceedings, we are absolutely committed to promoting equality, diversity, and inclusion for all our staff, patients, and communities. We have an EDI policy which we actively promote and with which we expect all our staff members to comply, even the Muslims." I added that part.
We'll respect and celebrate all the protected characteristics of our staff, patients, and communities equally. What do you want to bet this turns into another goddamn Tavistock? Because, again, this is another case of the woolly mammoth in the tar pit up to its hips in goo and to an uncaring sky until the tar pit replies, floop. Because people identifying as Christian in the UK are down below 50%. This is not a bad thing. On a couple of messages for Reggie on the way out the door, Jimmy in the Great Northwest writes, "Hey Reggie, like the Temptations said years ago and still today, it's a ball of confusion." And Jude said, "Do let Reggie know that his probing into subjects comes across. He is a humble and vulnerable soul from my vantage point. There is an innocent sweetness that is conveyed." Thank you, Jude. Thank you, Jimmy. And so that's it. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for the little miracle today. Thank you so much. We have knocked out all but today's funding, thanks to that community-made miracle. Thank you to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks so much to our a la carte contributors and for the challenges and everybody who responded. Thank you so, so, so much. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Reggie in the chat room. Thank you to Reggie. Roger. Robin. Thank you to Sparky and Roger in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Hey, not kidding. It's free. It's easy. Like, subscribe wherever you listen to the podcast. Leave a comment. That's free and easy, too. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Coming soon, happy news of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. Please stay safe, get your booster, get your flu shot, wipe down your surfaces, help stop the spread of RSV. Wear your masks, because the ivermectin crowd's out there and they haven't killed them all, they haven't all killed themselves off yet. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And for God's sakes, if some guy flipping and flapping like an old crow in a bunch of black robes comes towards you down the sidewalk saying, "Where did all these bloody Muslims come from?" Avoid that cleric like the plague. Because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.